I'd just like to spend a few minutes now looking at this passage, the end of Mark chapter 4. I just want to start really by asking a question of you. The question is, what is it this morning that you are afraid of? What are you afraid of this morning? I'm sure there's something somewhere in your heart where you are feeling anxious or nervous about something. It might be something that you are going through right now, or it might be something that you are afraid you might have to go through. Because life is often like that, isn't it? If we're not in the middle of some sort of storm, we are fearful that one might come. And that's why this passage is so helpful to us, because in this chapter, chapter 4, verses 35 to 41, we see a journey made by Jesus and his disciples in a boat across the Sea of Galilee. And in many ways, this journey pictures our lives. They're crossing over the sea, and everything is calm and peaceful to start with. But before long, a storm hits the boat. And it could be like that for us also. Life can be peaceful, life can be good, and then suddenly a cloud appears on the horizon. The winds start to blow, and before we know it, we are in a storm. And so what I would like to do in this passage is look at how should we approach storms? What should our attitude be before they come? And what should our attitude be in the midst of them? Now you'll notice, first of all, in verse 37, it said, there arose a great storm of wind. Before, as I said, it had been calm, the waves had been gentle, presumably not a cloud in the sky, but then a great wind started to blow. And it could be like that with life. Often we can be walking through life and then suddenly we hear something. We hear something, as it were, a great wind, a strong wind blowing. And we hear some news which unsettles us, which starts to make us feel uneasy. And when this happens, the typical response is to simply hope for the best. For example, we hear a rumor of a war, but we hope that the war won't hit us personally. We hear of a pandemic, but we hope that our family at least will not be affected. We hear of an economic crisis, but we hope that our job will stay secure. We hear of someone being diagnosed with some terminal illness, but we hope we will never hear the same news for ourselves. Unfortunately, such a response to fear is quite superficial. And the reason it's superficial is because before long, the storm which is out there can all too often become the storm that is in here. And you can see that in verse 37 as well. It says, there arose a great storm of wind, and the waves beat into the ship, so that now it was full. The trouble which was out there, the great wind which was only a rumor, now becomes real. As it were, the waves come into your own boat. They start affecting your own life. The war that you feared comes to you. And at least in years gone by, you might get a letter calling you up to service. The virus you feared comes to your own family, comes to your own house. The economic crisis threatens your job, and it is you who receives the diagnosis. And in those moments, fear can take hold of our hearts, and we can feel petrified, we can feel paralyzed, because our fear has come to pass. And we can even feel like the disciples did. Now, did you notice what it says in verse 38? And it says, and Jesus was in the hinder part of the ship, asleep on a pillow. And the disciples, the waves are beating into the boat. This storm is raging about them. It says the boat is filling up with water. And of all things, Jesus, the one who you would think would be of most help in this situation, is asleep. He's asleep on a pillow. And like the disciples, we perhaps can feel like God is asleep. That God is not concerned about our situation. Fear can often make us feel more alone than we are. And like the disciples, perhaps, we cry out to God and say, as they do in verse 38, Master, don't you care that we are perishing? And we can feel that way about God. God, do you not care about what we are going through? Do you not care about this storm that we are in? Now, if you can relate in any way to that description that I've just given to you, if you right now are battling anxieties and fears, perhaps about things which may happen or things which are happening to you right now, then the next words of this passage are for you. The next words that Christ speaks, he speaks to you and not just his disciples. Because one of the beauties of the Gospels is that we get to hear what Christ would say to us if he was still on earth. By reading the Gospels, we get to hear how Christ responded to his disciples. And the way he responded to them then gives us a guide to how he responds to us today. So when we cry out to God and say, God, don't you care that we are perishing? We can read this Gospel. We can read these passages. We can read of Christ. And we can hear what he would say to us. The disciples had the wonderful privilege of being able to grab Jesus by the shoulder and shake him and wake him up and ask him face to face the questions that were burdening them. But the privilege we have is that we get to hear the answer, and the answer in all its context. And in response to this question, to this rebuke, really, from the disciples, Christ has two rebukes of his own. And that's what I want to spend the rest of our time this morning looking at. Looking at these two rebukes that Christ gives in response to the disciples' questions. And as I repeat these rebukes, as I repeat these words of Christ, apply them to yourself. Apply them to your own situation right now. Whatever your fear is, it may not be, I'm sure it isn't, a literal storm with winds and waves. But whatever your winds and waves are, let these words be words to your heart, to your soul, to your situation. Let Christ speak to your anxiety. And this is the first rebuke that Christ gives. The first rebuke is to the waves. The first rebuke is to the storm. And he says in verse 39, the passage says, and he arose and rebuked the wind and said unto the sea, peace, be still. Might seem a strange thing, but the first thing Christ does is he speaks to the storm. Now, you may have heard of the story of King Canute, who did this. King Canute was he a Saxon king? I don't know if people better at history will be able to tell me. But he was a king who lived many years ago. And his servants told him and flattered him that he was so powerful that even the winds and the waves would obey him. And so he instructed that his throne be put on the seashore. And he told the waves to not lap any closer. And he got his feet wet. And he turned to his servants and rebuked them for being so foolish to flatter him in this way. But in this passage, the opposite happens. Christ, with all his authority, speaks and rebukes the winds and the waves, and they obey him. And they listen to his voice. It says in verse 39, and the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. What this teaches us is that the winds and the waves and the storms of life are God's servant, not his master. Now, for us, in many ways, they are our master, aren't they? When a storm comes, we have to batten down the hatches. We have to make sure that our windows are secure. We need to make sure that everything is in order, because we know we cannot withstand the storm by ourselves. In many ways, the storm is our master, but not for Christ. For Christ, the storm is his servant. And that was taught for us, actually, in that psalm which I read at the beginning. Do you remember? Psalm 104. In Psalm 104, the psalmist wrote, he said, "Bless the Lord, O my soul, O Lord my God. Thou art very great. Thou art clothed with honour and majesty, who coverest thyself with light as with a garment, who stretches out the heavens like a curtain, who layeth the beams of his chambers in the waters, who maketh the cloud his chariots, who walketh upon the wings of the wind." And the psalmist there says that the storms are simply God's chariot. He rides on the wings of the winds. The storms are tamed by God. They do not rule him, he rules them. The storms of life, even the physical storms, the wind and the waves, they do God's bidding. None of them happen without God's permission, without God's instruction. They are there to accomplish what God intends. We just sung that, in fact, in our last hymn. In that first verse, God moves in a mysterious way his wonders to perform. He plants his footsteps in the sea and rides upon the storm. I'm not sure if we've, either myself or James, may have shared this story before, but I'll share it again. Apparently, there was once in a small Texas town, a company which wanted to start construction on a new building to increase their business. But this new building would impact the local church and their ability to worship. And so the local church started a campaign to block the building of this building that would hinder their worship. And they did so with many petitions and prayers to God. Well, work progressed right up until the week before the building was due to be opened, when suddenly lightning struck the building. Lightning struck the building and burnt it to the ground. Now, the church, and at the beginning, were rather smug. They were rather smug that God, it seemed, had indeed heard their prayers, and this building would not hinder their worship anymore. They were smug until the owners of the building decided to sue the church. They sued the church on the grounds that the church was ultimately responsible for the demise of the building, either through direct or indirect actions or means. Now, the church vehemently denied this, and they themselves did a counter lawsuit saying they had no connection at all with the building's demise. So as the case made its way into court, the judge looked over the paperwork, and apparently at the hearing he commented, "I don't know how I'm going to decide this case. It appears that we have a business owner who believes in the power of prayer, and an entire church congregation that doesn't." We can believe that God can control, at least sometimes we can believe, that God can control the weather when it does us good, when the weather does us a good turn or is a blessing to us. But the reality is, all storms are servants of God. All storms are used as God. Even the ones which we cannot see immediately do us a good turn. Even the ones which we cannot see any blessing behind initially. God works his purposes through everything. Through every good and every bad circumstance that you go through, God is accomplishing his purposes. Again, that is what the hymn we just sang said. Did you notice it? I forget which verse it was. In verse 4. William Cooper writes, "Judge not the Lord by feeble sense, but trust him for his grace. Behind a frowning providence, he hides a smiling face." You may not be able to see how the storm you are going through or the storm you fear can do you good. But behind the frowning providence, behind the frowning look, there is a smiling face. God is accomplishing his purposes in your life, and you do not need to fear. It might seem strange initially to say that God is in control of a storm which perhaps kills thousands of people, perhaps even kills members of your own family, maybe people who are your own friends. And it might seem cruel and hard to say that God was in control of that. In fact, it's the opposite. It's an amazing comfort to know that God is in control. It's far worse to think that the storm happened and God had nothing to do with it, that God somehow could not prevent it. Instead, the Bible tells us that God works all things according to the purpose of his will. And you may not be able to see the good now, but you can rest assured there is good in it. And one day you will see it. We do not need to fear the storms of life, because they are God's servants, and he will not let them ultimately harm his children. So that's the first rebuke. The first rebuke is to the storm, which shows us that storms are God's servants, not his master. So we do not need to fear them. They are in the hands of our loving Father, if we are trusting in God, if we are indeed his children. But his second rebuke is to the disciples. His second rebuke is aimed at the disciples who are with him in the boat. And you can read that in verse 40. Verse 40, the passage says, "And Jesus said unto them, Why are ye so fearful? How is it that ye have no faith?" Christ's second rebuke is, why are you so afraid? What are you so scared of? And if you or I are fearful this morning, Christ asks the same question to us. Whatever it is that you are afraid of, Christ says to you, why are you so fearful? Are you afraid of the coronavirus? Are you afraid of a doctor's diagnosis? Are you perhaps afraid for your family? Perhaps that they will get the virus, or something will happen to them. Perhaps they are going away and you fear what will become of them. Jesus says to you, why? Why are you so afraid? Now, to be clear, I'm not saying, as I say that we shouldn't take care and take precautions in all of these things. Wanting your family or yourself to live is not the same thing as fearing what will happen if you or they die. Do you see that? It's not the same thing to say that I want to live. That is not necessarily the same thing as saying that I'm afraid to die. We shouldn't be afraid to die if we are God's children. But that doesn't mean we don't want to live. I don't fear rain. Rain does not, at least gentle rain, doesn't make me fear. But that doesn't mean I want to get wet. If I go outside, I'll take an umbrella if I can, because I don't want to get wet, but I don't fear the rain. I don't want to get the virus. That does not mean necessarily that I fear it. But what I mean is, and what Christ means by this question, is do you, even after all wise and sensible precautions that you should take and that I should take and that we should all take in life, wearing masks as we're instructed to, looking after your health, taking care of your family. If after all these wise and sensible things, you still feel afraid, Christ asks you, why? What is it that you are so afraid of? And remember, he doesn't say it with ridicule. Christ, when he asks that question, isn't saying it like a boy might mock his friend who perhaps is afraid of a dog or something. He's not ridiculing his disciples. And he doesn't say it with disdain either, like a sergeant major might despise a soldier who's afraid to go into battle. Jesus doesn't say this question with disgust. Instead, he asks it with love. He asks it with love, like a father who's holding the hand of his son who is afraid of the dark. I heard a story from the author Max Lucado. You may have heard of him. But he told a story of how when he was 6 years old, his father inadvisedly allowed him to stay up and watch a film with him called The Wolfman. And his father later came to regret that decision because the film left the young boy Max convinced that the Wolfman spent each night prowling the house, waiting to kill unsuspecting little boys. And his fear proved problematic because in order for Max to reach the kitchen from his bedroom, in his mind, he had to pass by the place where the Wolfman lurked. And so more than once, he had to run to his father's bedroom to wake him. And he said that his father was sleeping in his bed, and it reminded him of Jesus sleeping in the boat. And he couldn't believe how his father could be asleep while the Wolfman was lurking in the house. And he would wake his dad and say that he needed to help him to come to get a glass of water from the kitchen. And his father would ask him again, like Jesus, "Why are you so afraid?" And his son would reply, "The Wolfman." And so repeatedly, his father would have to get up, hold his son's hand, and take him to the kitchen to get a glass of water. And the young boy, Max, would say how astounded he was at the courage of his father, how amazed he was at the superhuman courage his father showed by tackling and being willing to dare the Wolfman. But of course, the reason why his father was not afraid was not because his father was brave. He may have been brave, but that wasn't why he wasn't afraid. The reason he wasn't afraid was because there was nothing to fear. The Wolfman didn't exist. And it's for the same reason that Christ was asleep in the boat. The reason that Christ could sleep on that pillow was because there was nothing to be afraid of. Jesus had complete trust in the strength and in the wisdom of his Father. And when we respond with fear to the storms of life, whatever that storm might be, we betray the fact that we don't. Again, that might seem a harsh thing to say, but it's true. That's the implication of Christ's words. When we respond to the storms of life with fear, we demonstrate that we don't have the trust in the strength and in the wisdom of our Father that Christ himself had. Now, the disciples certainly had some faith. You can see that from the fact that they woke Jesus up at all. If they had no faith, they wouldn't even bothered. If they had no faith, they wouldn't have even bothered to raise Christ. They would have given up and despaired. But in Matthew's gospel, Christ rebukes them for their little faith. Their fear demonstrated that their faith was but little. It was but small. And our fear also betrays the fact that our faith is small if we don't have enough trust to believe that whatever we are going through, God will work out together for good. Because that's what faith is. Faith is not merely wishful thinking. It's not screwing up your courage and hoping for the best, hoping against hope. Faith is trusting God's promises. Faith is trusting what God has said. And God has said, all things work together for good to them that love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. Christ has said, "I go to prepare a place for you. If it was not so, I would have told you." If you are a believer this morning, if you have repented of your sin, if you have surrendered to God, and you are trusting in him to get you safe to heaven, then you have nothing to fear. You have nothing at all to fear in life. Life might become uncomfortable, but no ultimate harm will ever come to you. You can, as it were, rest like Jesus slept on that pillow. One final story. There was once a mother who was preparing to put her 4-year child to bed. And the child was scared of the dark. And the mother herself was also anxious because her husband and the child's father was away on business. And for the first night of their marriage, she would have to spend the night alone with her child. And when the light was out, the child caught a glimpse of the moon outside her window. And she turned to her mum and she said, "Mummy, is the moon God's light? Is the moon God's light?" And her mum said, "Yes." So the girl responded and said, "Will God put out his light and go to sleep?" And her mum responded, "No, no, God never goes to sleep." And then with words which reassured the little girl and also reassured her mother, with all the simplicity of childlike faith, the little girl said, "Well, as long as God is up, there is no sense either of us staying awake." That little girl understood the fact that what Christ is trying to teach his disciples, that God is always awake. God always has everything under control. When we fret and when we're anxious and when we're fearful, it's like us being like that little girl trying to stay awake in order to stop whatever bad thing happening, But there is no need. There is no sense in fretting. There is no sense in worrying because God has it all under control. God has all our circumstances under his loving care. And he works all things according to the counsel of his will. So there is no sense in us being afraid. So those are the two rebukes. The first rebuke to the storm, demonstrating that Christ is in control. God is in control of all the storms of life. But the second rebuke is to us. Why are we so afraid? Why are we so fearful when we have a loving Father who is caring for us? And that's why I've chosen, as our last hymn, a hymn which expresses that same theme in song. And it's a song which I pick, I think it's probably the hymn I pick most often. It's probably one of my favourite hymns, but you'll see how apt it is, particularly verse 2. It says, "Be still, my soul, thy God doth undertake to guide the future as he has the past. Thy hope, thy confidence, let nothing shake. All now mysterious shall be bright at last. Be still, my soul, the waves and winds still know his voice who ruled them while he dwelt below." So let's meditate on these words as we listen to our final.